I'd like to welcome you to Mother Max Public House in Limerick City. We're here in Peggy's parlour this evening to welcome Dick Max as part of our Meet the Brewers series. They're joining us online along with a number of our customers, and we'd like to say a big hello to Graham, Ozzy and Laura. So Ozzy, to build a brewery is always difficult, requires a lot of effort and time and money. What were your plans originally, and I suppose how did you develop what you have now?
Our original plan was to start off the brewery a lot bigger than we ended up with. We were going to be knocking buildings and building from scratch, brand new, where industrial sort of warehouse. We were originally planning on opening up. It probably would have been a 20 hectolitre brewery, like 2,000 litres every time we brew. And we had plans done up for that. We were about to go for planning for permission to change the premises it was going to go in and start building. And it was around that time, about 5 years ago, where anyone who has a bit of interest now in it would kind of know what I'm talking about. There was a stage that, as far as I could see, every month or two, there seemed to be a new brewery opening up in the country. And there was a stage that we looked at it and we were wondering, like, is it feasible to open up this brewery at the time that it was looking like there was going to be too many breweries opening? And we took a big decision and we changed everything. We went back to the drawing board and we decided to come up with a much, like, if we had opened that original brewery, we would need to sell our beer all over the country. So we decided to change tack completely and go with a much more local idea of just basically starting up a small little brewery. We started off with the 500 litre brew kit, three 1,000 litre fermenters. And the idea was we would use Dick Max Pub itself, which is all the history there, and it's a very famous pub. We would use that as our sort of, our flagship location, that they would sell the majority of the beer for us, and that we would then, you know, try and take on a couple of customers around town and see how it went. That was the plan at the start. When we did finally get open, we went over to Germany and we went looking at different brewing equipment at Brauweil over there in Nuremberg. And we decided to go with Braukon, who are there around Munich. And they have a very good reputation in brewery building. And we went with those guys and it all seemed to happen very quick then. And the one of the major changes was, because we were going for the smaller brewery, we did not have to go to the expense of knocking the buildings and rebuilding. It was sort of looking at, anyone who's been down there will know what I mean. It was looking at us in the face the whole time, this old cow shed that was sitting there for years. A couple of different uses at the time, but we decided to go for that and just convert that into our brewery. So we didn't even make many changes. We just went with what was in there and squeezed what we could inside there. When we got the brewery open, within about 2 months, we were getting approached by different pubs around Dingle looking to sell the beer, which we never really thought would happen in the first year or two. We always thought it would take a while to develop the brand. And I suppose, you know, the whole thing about being down in a place like Dingle is, we know that the tourists are going to come to Dingle and they're going to go for our product. That's what they go for. As I say, like, tourists are the people who seem to go for anything local when they come to Ireland. But like I always say to people, who are the hardest people to sell a local product to? Locals. So when it happened that the locals started drinking our beer and started asking for it in a couple of different pubs, we got the owners of those pubs were coming to us looking for the beer. And we did our calculations and we kind of figured out that we were very soon going to run out of beer. So within 2 months of opening, maybe 3 months, we were sending off a deposit to get new tanks and add on to the brewery. And the idea was that we did that over that winter, you might say, and we had ordered these new tanks and it changed the brewery from basically being a 3,000 litre brewery up to an 11,000 litre brewery. We added on four 2,000 litre tanks onto that. We had them ready for the next season, which would be, I suppose, spring, summer 2018. And that's what we've done ever since, really.
Excellent. And I see Graham has joined us. Hello, Graham.
Hello, everyone.
So Graham is the brewer in Dick Max. Did I see a beer in your hand, Graham?
You did, but I'm sticking with the dry January, but still supporting the good cause. The Wicklow Wolf, non-alcoholic. It's a tough one, but they made a good job of it, so that's pretty good. It'll do the job for now.
So do you want to tell us a bit about yourself, Graham, and how you got into brewing and why you love Dick Max and working under every day?
Well, after you just listen to Ozzy there, you'll know why I love Dick Max. Ozzy's a great guy to work with, and so are the rest of the lads. It's great fun. It's they're just kind of natural, authentic lads, loving the whole beer scene, beer, and we're not shooting for the stars. We're just keeping it small, keeping it local, and trying to produce the best beers we can. So I worked for two previous breweries beforehand, Irish breweries. I've been brewing. I started working in a brewery in 2012. So I've been, nearly at it, eight, 9 years now. Previous to that, I was home brewing a lot. So I was in bigger breweries. They're good, but as you get bigger, quality can slip. Not in all breweries, but in most breweries and bigger breweries, they can slip. So it was great just to come to Ozzy and the lads, and they had a nice small little brewery, wanted to keep things modest enough and just produce good quality beer and also a few exciting ones as well. So once or twice a year, mostly in the winter months, we get a chance to do a few speciality beers, which I have two of there. Mostly coming up to the food festival in Dingle, we get to squeeze in a few just to keep the fans, give them something extra and give them something different as well, which that's what it's all about. In the summertime, we're so busy, we just stick with the core beers, which we have a pale ale, an IPA, amber ale, and a stout. So we're pretty full on with them. They're just full to capacity and literally filling the kegs and going straight to the bar. So that's how tight it is in the summertime. But then it loosens off and, dries up then in the winter. And then we get to have a bit of a play in the brewery and come up with some new beers. And we love that part, because it's great to be able to be bringing out new and different beers and, testing our abilities, testing the brewery, and also just being creative, which it's all about. That's what craft beer is all about.
So before we get into the beer, I know we had asked Laura that she wanted to say a few words, right? So Laura kind of during the summer runs the kind of the visitor side of it. And to be fair, myself and James were down there earlier, middle of last year. We were actually very, very impressed with her knowledge of brewing, the brewery, and if I'm going to say it, actually her passion for everything that was Dick Max. Can you try and join her? Are you there?
Sorry about that, lads.
We're all right. Go on. Do you want to say a few words about why you love Dick Max and why you actually travel from Cork every summer to rock and roll with him?
Yeah, do you know what? Everyone always asks me, they're like, it's definitely the Kerry man, but it was actually the stout. The coffee stout that the lads brewed actually up until the beginning of 2020. So that was another thing that went down the Swanee in 2020 that we'll remember well, but what happened was I actually went down to Dingle for a weekend, like I suppose we all do, from Cork, and I went down with a group of friends of mine, and we just did the tour because it was raining. And I was blown away. I'd never heard of craft beer in my life, really. I thought hop house was craft beer, that was my knowledge. And, I was looking at, what are these fellas doing out the back of a pub? It was an old cow shed. I was like, this is hilarious, And then went in and I saw the equipment and I was like, okay, wow, I'm not going out of this tour and getting a vodka and wait. Automatically, my outlook on the whole industry changed. Because I had worked in a bar since I was 16, and that's 10 years ago. So you're looking at, I suppose, a lot of bar work, but never really the craft beer world. And that was 3 years ago now. And then I just kept pestering Finn. And I was like, oh, how are you getting on in the brewery? And how are you getting on? And how are you getting on in the brewery? And then I met Ozzy a few times at the food festival. And again, it was all questions, So the lads gave me a chance then in summer 2019. And it went, I suppose, incredibly well in regards to me learning as well, you know. And again, like, that's what I love. And Graham touched off it as well, you know, it's an extremely creative industry. You know, you're looking at like some beers, even in the States and coming into Ireland now as well, you know, you're talking about like peanut butter stouts and like all this crack. And it's, you know, it is an extremely creative industry. But it's also like a perfect balance between science and art, you know. And so it's really, you're kind of pulling on all angles, you know, of, I suppose, learning and creation. But that's what I love most about it as well, is definitely the people coming in the door, you know, every single day I'm there. And yeah, I tell a bit of my own story about how I ended up there. But my favorite part is the fact that it was just three buddies, you know, it was three lads that gave it a shot. And, you know, it was definitely worth it, you know, looking back now and looking at what is hopefully ahead as well, you know. So cheers to that.
Excellent. Thanks, Laura. So I'm going to go back to Graham and Ozzy, right? So we have four beautiful beers for me. We have a Session IPA, the Pale Ale, and then we have the two Barrel Aged. I think probably most people here are probably most interested in the Barrel Aged beers that you have. One of them is a Honey and Hemp Ale, and the other is a Peated Red. Do you want to maybe talk us through them or talk a little bit about them, Graham?
Yeah. So, if you want to start with the Peated Red Ale, it was 7 months in the barrel, and it went in at around 6.1% alcohol. It's hard to say what a type of alcohol it gains. You'd have to send it off for a lab to that, but it generally will go up between 0.5 and 1.5% in the barrel. Going just off tasting, I would reckon it came up to probably around just under 7% alcohol in the Peated Red. Had lots of kind of, you know, the usual kind of red ale type of malt. So had some nice caramel crystals, toffee malt in there, just to give it that lovely kind of caramel and toffee kind of flavor. Then there was also, you know, then the idea then, I tried this beer a couple of times before in a previous brewery. This is where this beer kind of came up for me. And I've always loved a peated stout. It's one of my favorite beers. But one other brewer actually had this idea of doing a peated red. And we tried it, and we must have tried it probably 4 or 6 times on a pilot kit. And we just couldn't crack it. It just wasn't happening. It wasn't balanced. But it always kind of, that was years ago, and it always played in my mind, you know. I really just wanted to crack that beer. And looking back on the previous recipes, trying to, you know, touch them up a bit, and which I did, and that kind of came true. So the hardest point was trying to balance that peatedness. There's a very fine line with the peated malts that goes in there. And when you go over it, it just seems to take over the whole beer, and it becomes very harsh and a bit too much, and the rest of the beer is kind of lost. So I'm happy with the level of peatiness in that, which is kind of on the back end. It's almost, you can drink it, and it's almost, you're looking for it. You want to look for it, you don't want it in your face, but it's there. So I'm kind of happy with that. And then it's nice and nutty, and also it's got the orange. I used a lot of Amarillo hop inside there, and Belma and Apollo hop. So there's plenty of kind of nice orangey, citrusy kind of background flavor. Now, the trouble with barrel-aged beers is the hops are lost a lot of the times because it's in there for so long. Hops decrease very fast. So their hobby beers are not great for barrel aging because they just decrease so much, and they just kind of lose out, and then the sweetness kind of takes over. So it's kind of a lot of them about malty beers with the barrel aging. So, but I still get a lot of orange there, and so that's nice. So it kind of has that caramel toffee peated finish flavor there, and then a bit of orange coming through. And then also from the barrel, it was in a Marsala cask, and it was sent to us from Walsh's Distillery, and I previously had the Irishman whiskey in it. So they sent us down straight away when they opened it up and emptied it, and they get it to us as quick as they can, and then we fill it up. So we're constantly, you know, in contact with the distilleries, with the barrel, because it's really important to get them fresh, the fresh barrels, just after they've been disgorged. You want to get them straight away and fill them up. So we have a good guy that works with us. He's called Peter White, and he actually runs the Whiskey Society down here, and he's a good friend of Finn's. So he's a great contact for us, and works on getting the barrels for us as well, and just making them little collaborations happen. So when you work tight like that, you can get good produce, you know, because you just keep everything fresh, which plays a big part of it. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with the beer. How's it going down for everyone else?
It's absolutely delicious. Yeah, I'll tell you the truth, Graham. I normally don't like peated drinks, Scotch whiskey, peated beer. It's not my thing, right? But yeah, no, it's absolutely delicious. Can I just ask how many barrels of this do you actually produce in a year?
Yeah, so these are just once-off beers. Like, literally, there was around, I think, 500 litres of this made. It was only kind of one tank, wasn't even full tank. It was just made for the purpose of doing the collaboration with Walsh's Distillery. So it was literally just filling, I think, one or two casks, and and that was it then. And we have all of it in kegs, what's left of it. And then the casks go back up to Walsh's Distillery to be refilled. And they'll refill it then with their spirit. And then in about 8 to 9 months' time, they then release the whiskey with the collaboration of Dick Max. We did one previously that was a big hit, which was the a coffee stout one. So that's... I don't know if the camera's good enough to pick that up, but that's the Irishman coffee stout collaboration.
Yeah.
So we have that one. So that would be coming out as well, and it would have, like, you know, instead with the peated red ale collaboration as well with that. And then we also did, last year I did a seaweed IPA, which was fantastic, and they did the Rider's Tears and then the Seaweed IPA collaboration.
Yeah.
So these are just, you know, kind of once-off type of things. And, you know, it's fun and it's something different. So it's great. We love doing it. It's very interesting with the product you come out with as well. So
why don't we open up the floor a little bit? Is there anyone that wants to ask Graham any questions about this beautiful peated red? If you do, just unmute yourself and ask the question.
There's one question I would like to ask, and it's with regard to the water that you use for the brewing. Is there anything that you would do? I know you work off your own well. When I was down there, Laura said that you work off your own well out the back. Is what do you have to do to condition the water to get it right for brewing? And is there is it hard water? Is it, you know?
It's medium water. The pH is coming in at around 7, you know, so, you know, it's kind of average enough water. I change around the salts for different beers. You know, I'd use the sodium sulfate for more of the hoppy beers, and then I'd use the chloride for maltier beers. Okay. I wouldn't add it into the actual brewing water. I'd add it into the wort.
Okay.
So most of what the salts are generally for are some brewers use it for pH control, but I just find it's too much of it. You have to use to get the pH. So I use the sour malt, which is brilliant at bringing down the pH for your mashes, for your enzymes. But the salts are generally for the yeast health.
Okay.
And so I put them in at the end, kind of the end of the process, into the whirlpool. and let them mix up in there, and then it transfers into the fermenter and just before you pitch the yeast. And because the yeast needs all them salts just for yeast health and yeast growth to get good fermentations. So I would generally go with the sulfates for the hoppy beers, because it just brings a cleaner crisp for the hops to shine through. And then the malty beers, I'll lean on the chloride side, because again, that pronounces the maltiness.
Okay.
Thank
you very much.
No worries.
Thanks, Adrian. Hugh, you had your hand raised. Have you a question?
I do. Hello. I just wondered, could you explain more about the peating process with beer? Is there any kind of similarities to whiskey? And then the second thing is, as part of that, is if it is close to whiskey, are you quite careful in your selection of peat? Like, I've been told, I'm a bit of a blow-in here, but I've been told that, you know, you don't want any of the brown shite, you want black peat. But, you know, that's the good stuff, you know, I don't know.
I just went for a peated peated malt that I use. It's actually from Castle Malting, a Belgium peated malt. I just found it's much smoother for using for beer. Some peat malts are just, they can just be really harsh and take over. It's very, very hard to get it balanced. So it's like you'd use very little of it compared to the whiskey. When they're using it in the whiskey mash, they'd use it up to probably 20 to 30% of the mash. But in beer, you wouldn't go over 5%. 5% would be too much. You know, that beer is just under 3% of the mash bill, of the total mash. That's how effective and strong that malt is. You just need a tiny bit, and it really, you get such a strong flavor from it. But the peated malt, it's just germinated malted barley. They have it in a smokehouse, and in the smokehouse, they're just using peat, like turf, to smoke it through. And it would be cold smoked, you know, they'll have a fire in one chamber, and they'll pump the smoke through the malt. And then the malt just absorbs all the flavors and aromas from the peat. So for me, I love, as I said, I love the peated stouts, and always wanted to just do the peated red just to try balance it. It was a big challenge. But I just love it. It's a lovely winter drink. It just reminds me of sitting in an old shed in the West Kerry with the turf fire. Smoking in your face, more than up the chimney, and a bit of whiskey there as well. It just gives a lovely kind of character and depth to the beer. And for most Irish people anyway, or Scottish people, they love the old turf fires. So a bit of sentimental character is always good as well. It's a great malt to use, but you just have to be very careful using it.
And just to the final part of Hugh's question, the quality of the peat that's used. I don't know if it'll have any effect on the malting process, because I think they just want smoke.
It'd be just the smoke. Yeah, I'm not sure what type of peat they use, they've been doing it for centuries, this crowd. They're great, all their malts are top quality. Generally when you go with the older maltings, they've done this for generations. They've trialed and tested everything. They generally get it right with the older malting companies. They've been doing things for so long, and they've got these things dialed in. Compared to newer companies, it takes a while. And you're always going to be figuring these things out as you go. But it's the Castle Malting company, and they sell them on the home. If you're home brewing, they sell it on the home brew company. So you can get it from there, or you can go online and buy it directly, actually, as well, but only in big bags. But
perfect.
So that, yeah.
Hugh, you're okay with that, yeah? You thumbs up from you. Owen Nocton, you have your hand up. Hello, Owen.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Graham, how's it going?
Not too bad now, thanks.
On the peated red ale, I recently tried a Galway Bay brewery, and it was a barley wine, and the taste is very similar to the barley wine. I was just wondering, would there be something like that coming along in the pipeline of something like a barley wine? And I know that the brewer, the Galway Bay Brewery one, was 13%, but it's pretty strong for a beer. So I was just wondering, do you have anything in the pipeline like along that? It's very similar.
I'm always trying to push the alcohol up because I like the specialities stronger, especially barrel aged. The barrel aged beers they're just much better when they're higher percent. And also they do generally sell slower, so it's better to have them high in alcohol because they preserve better as well. I'd love to do the barley wine. I suppose we were just balancing the sales point of view for people coming into a bar, and we do want people to have a pint of it, you know. But a pint of 13% barley wine, it's pretty hard to sell. People are nearly running away from it.
I know you did the there was a stout, I think it might have been through one of the food festivals, yeah, where you did the stout with the bourbon barrel aged. Was phenomenal.
Yeah, that was
9%, I think it was around.
Yeah, that was an imperial, the stout, yeah. And so I had molasses, ginger and cardamom through that. And it was around 9.5%. It was great. It was fantastic. People were afraid of it at the start. The locals were kind of afraid of it. And it was amazing. It took around, you know, we still had it like 8 months later. And they started drinking it and then they loved it. And they were nearly using it like a pint of vitamins, you know. They're like drinking it and going, oh, this is keeping all the viruses and colds away. And they're having it religiously then. And it was amazing to watch these beers and taste these beers mature as well. That beer just got better and better as it aged. Just all the sugars just started blending together and really just blending really nice and balancing out everything. And you know, some of the harsher flavors like the molasses and the ginger was quite harsh at the start, but they, you know, they started dimming down a bit and the sugars started blending and balancing better. So, these beers are so exciting because you could do exactly the same beers into exactly the same barrels, do everything exactly the same and keep them beside each other in the same room and fill them and empty them on the same day. And the two barrels could be completely different. So it's so exciting doing the barrel aging because each barrel has its own little environment of bacteria and wild yeast inside. So this is why you're getting all these sour flavors and funky acetaldehydes and stuff like that. It's because of all the bacteria and the wild yeast that lives inside the barrels. It's really exciting to do them, and you can come out with completely different. Every batch is going to be different. Which I love that, you know, it's because it just brings different qualities from different areas of beer. So it's just an exciting barrel aging. But I'd absolutely love to do the barrel wine, the barley wine. And I suppose the barley wine, I'd like, if we were doing it, we'd probably have to bottle it. Which we are looking at that now this year. We kind of have to look at it going through this year, starting trying to package our beer in some way. And I think for a barley wine, you'd probably want to bottle it all because it would sell very slow in the keg. So that's the only reason we kind of, you know, they're not 13% is because we're selling them by the keg. So that's the only reason we're kind of... But yeah, if we start bottling, I'm sure Ozzy will let me do a a 13 or 14% barley wine.
Yeah, at this stage, Graham.
I don't think I'd get a lot of those like I did on Paddy's Day that time when you released that coffee stout.
Oh, yeah. You had a partner in crime that day, Owen. I think he'd have no problem with it.
But just on that point that Graham raised, right? I mean, you'll see in the bar here, we're very conscious of the ABV of the beers that we pour. And since we've got into lockdown or since the pandemic and we've moved to growlers only, we've been more adventurous in the higher ABV beers because people take them home. You know, whereas when we have high ABV beers in the bar, not everyone is, I suppose, as educated in how to drink a high ABV beer or not. You know, and you have people who don't appreciate that it's sometimes it's like a wine, it's like a spirit. You know, it's not just a, it's not a pint of Heineken, it's not a pint of Guinness, right? And you know, people will get caught out in the moment on a Saturday night as they're drinking a pint of it. And they're in around, and before you know it, you know, they may as well have drank 3 points for every one that their friends are drinking, and the night is ruined for them. So we here, and I know quite a number of other bars, craft beer bars, will be very conscious of the ABV. And what you'll actually find is we often don't pour high ABV on a Friday and a Saturday night, but you will get it Sunday through Thursday.
Yeah.
Because you're in for one or two beers because you've worked the following day, so you've been respectful and mindful of it, but you're not looking to actually get drunk or volume, you know.
Well, can I come in there, Michael, for a second?
Yeah, go for it.
Speaking about there, talking about the high ABV, but myself and Graham, there's always a bit of a laugh between us when we're a new beer is being planned and it's as every day we're talking about it might go up by 0.5% when I'm dealing with Graham kind of thing, and I'm always trying to say, look, we need to keep it a bit lower. But when it came to that Imperial Stout, we were bringing it out, we were, look, the whole thing about having such a small little brewery like we have is we can be very adventurous. I always say to people that when we tried out the coffee stout the very first day, it was literally for the food festival for opening the brewery the very first year we opened it. And nobody, as far as I know, we were the first brewery in the country to do a coffee stout. It was Graham's idea. I remember when he said it to me, I had coffee stout before when I was in the States. And I remember straight away saying, go for it. Yeah, I want to go for it. The way we looked at it was with that beer, that was only going to be a 5% beer is, you know, the brewery is so small. If the customers don't buy it, we'll drink it ourselves. There's not a big deal there. But when it came to, I know by the next Christmas, when we were talking about doing a Christmas beer, which we were, you know, like I say, we were all excited in the middle of winter. We get to, Graham gets to, I suppose, we give him free rein to do whatever he wants. The Imperial Stout came up. We made it. We were delighted with it. We put it on in Dick Mac's pub and didn't sell any of it. It was during Christmas week. Nobody comes to Dingle on Christmas week to be drinking 8.5% beer. And we actually, we just had to improvise. And we literally had all these kegs. We probably did 500 litres of it. We had all these kegs. And we pulled them back, like literally took them back from Dick Mac's pub. They didn't sell over the Christmas. We got whiskey cast from Dingle Whiskey, and we put it into it because we didn't know what else to do. And then it sort of by accident worked out that beer then was ready in the summer in the barrels. And that's when the town is flooded with people from all over the world, America, England, Germany, everywhere, that are generally more used to drinking stronger beers than us. And it literally sold then. And that's even when the locals started drinking it, because they started seeing other people drinking and how you drink it. You don't throw back pints. You do, you know, you drink your small little glasses as I'm doing here. And it was then we realized that certain drinks at certain times would work. Just like you said there, weekdays, you'd nearly sell more of it than you might at the weekends. It's just the way it goes. So it kind of means every time we do a beer, you're sort of going a new beer like that. You're going into uncharted territory. We have no idea how it will go, and that's what makes it really exciting when we do it. Like that Imperial Stout that Graham is talking about. As far as I know, we did that on our first Christmas open. We still had some of that beer this time last year left over, and as Graham said, it was getting better in the keg all the time. So it was at least two. It was at least 2.5 years old, and it was still perfect and getting better, as I say. So it may, you know, it, it makes us want to play around a lot more now with those stronger beers. But knowing that we have to do, like you guys there, improvise and start, you know, preparing to have it packaged some way that we can sell it in different outlets, not just pubs. So that's our next thing that we're working on at the moment.
Excellent. So when we move on to the beautiful Honey and Hemp, I'm a fan of of honey ales. And the first time I had the Honey and Hemp, I think when we were down there last year, and yeah, it's definitely different, and definitely what I wasn't what I wasn't expecting. But I'll leave it to you, Graham, to go through.
Graham,
sorry, 1 second. I'll just say there. The reason I'll say you said there about honey beer. I never had a honey beer until Graham came back from Lithuania with a honey ale, as far as I know, Graham. And I had never had one before, and he brought me a bottle, and I fell in love with that. It was just one bottle. He wouldn't give me a second one. But when he came up with this idea of the honey and hemp, I was just dying for it, kind of thing. But I'll just he can tell now how it all went.
Yeah. So the beer was inspired by, again, some of my favorite beers. My partner's Lithuanian, so I go to Lithuania quite a lot. And two of my favorite beers over there was a honey beer and also a hemp beer. And coming up to the food festival, me and Ozzy were talking about what beers we could do. And, you know, we're just kind of shooting ideas off each other. And Ozzy really wanted a Belgian blonde because he loves Belgian blondes. So I was like, yeah, I love Belgian blondes as well. So, I had a Belgian blonde recipe. I made it up and we used a Belgian strain yeast as well just to get that nice Belgian character in there. But then also, them two beers came into my head and I said, well, why don't, I'll stick some honey and hemp through it. So we went for that idea, and it was coming out of the barrel was a complete surprise to me. I didn't think that it would pick up all them the sour notes. I was actually worried about that beer picking up some of the oakiness and whiskey flavor that I wasn't sure would marry with them flavors. But as it turned out, completely different, and I'm really happy with that. But it was in the barrel for 8 months again. It was a bit longer than the peated red. It was barrels that came from Eckenville up in Scotland, which they had just emptied, and they were fresh barrels as well, which are only used once. They were American bourbon casks that Eckenville filled with triple pot still whiskey. And they sent them down to us straight away again, just as they disgorged them. I was working I was on email with the head distiller, and we were, on logistics very tight with that, just making sure we got it as quick as we could. And again, Peter White was involved, which he's fantastic for them type of things. So they're triple pot still from Eckenville, and so the barrel smelled absolutely amazing. So on the maltiness, it's the usual Belgian malt characters with a light caramel, and I use very light caramel in it. I didn't want to give it too much color. I wanted to keep it blonde. On the hops, I used a lovely hop which I love is lemon drop, which is you'll get that nice kind of lemon zesty on the nose, and also middle fruit, which is quite a floral German hop. So it's a nice floral and kind of lemon zest to it. And then the honey, the honey went in, and also hulled hemp through the mash. The honey went into the boil, and the hulled hemp went into the mash bill. We didn't use local honey, which we did want to use it, but it was just turning out way too expensive. So we just went with off the shelf on the line honey just for this one. But we would, if we're doing it again, we knew it kind of worked out, so we'd actually like to go down and try use some local honey. But it's like buying gold down here. So Yeah, it went in into the barrel at 15 and a half Play-Doh, which that's about 6.8% ABV. It went into the barrel. So it's probably come out at around 7.5, near to 8%. So it's actually, even though it tastes smoother, it's actually stronger than the peated red. And then it took a lovely turn, which I didn't expect, and it took up the lacto, and it created a sourness that developed inside the barrel. So before it went into the barrel, it wasn't sour at all. But from the bacteria and the wild yeast inside the barrel, they fermented further into the barrel, and they developed this sourness. Again, another all-time favorite beer of mine is Boone Goose, which Ozzy would know very well, because we were in Belgium earlier last year, and we were drinking rounds of it. And it was amazing, because it actually reminds me of Boone Goose, but just a bit more maltier, more body. That beer is, it's really very happy with that beer, how it turned out. A complete surprise with the barrel. Again, that's just barrel aging. It's so much fun. It's out of everybody's hands. You kind of just let nature take over and see what comes out. So it was a great surprise. Really enjoying it, and I'm very happy with that beer. So how do you like it, Michael? Are you enjoying it?
I purposely haven't tasted the barrel aged beers this week. I've kept them for tonight to drink. Yeah. So I've had the honey and hemp in the pub, the 6.5% non-barrel aged. This is it. To be fair, it's completely different.
Yeah.
I really like sours.
Oh, good.
It almost reminds me of a beer that I had over the Christmas from Otterbank. One of their mixed fermentations or wild fermentations. That kind of sour, the bitterness to it. It's good. It's very, very good. I really like it.
No, I'm very happy. And that's another thing that which we love doing. When we make these beers, we keg a few just as normal, straight from the tank. And then we put whatever aside then for barrels as well. So, you know, it's great then to, if you're around Dick Max, to drink it before it goes into the barrel and drink it after it comes out of the barrel. It comes out a completely different beer. And it's just a great experience to have. And, you know, it's just what small breweries can do and craft breweries can do. And, you know, it's exciting new flavors and something different, and just giving people something different and a bit more to a bit more options out there for people. I'm a big fan of sour beers. I wasn't at the start. I remember my first sour beer, and this is infected. How can I drink this? You know, it's an acquired taste. I started drinking more with food, and that made it a lot easier. And you can just drink it like wine then, instead of drinking it like glasses of wine instead of with your dinner. So it pairs really well with foods. I just started loving sours then and drinking more and more of them. And so I'd love to see more sours in Ireland, Irish beers doing them. But, you know, you need the demand there. You need people to come around to them because they can be a completely different beast. And, you know, you just bring so much more to the table. And they're so exciting because they're so different than normal beers.
Yeah, and I think we're getting very lucky because, as I said, we have Otterbank, and then what are the White Street? You know, they're kind of two of the newer breweries that we've seen, and they're kind of big into the sours, mixed fermentations, it's delicious. It's funny. White Street have a Limerick connection. They used to drink in the bar here when we first opened up, and now they're going to open the brewery. We take credit for that 100%. That really is what was the barrel again that it was aged in?
It was a fresh barrel. It was only filled once. It was an American bourbon cask, which had triple distilled, triple pot stilled from Eckenville.
It's
fantastic. Again, you know, the more these become, you know, popular and, you know, they are succeeding, distillers will come around to it more and they'll send you better casks and barrels because they know it's working and they know it's worthwhile doing. Because, you know, when they're filling a whole cask full of their spirit that your beer was in, it's a huge risk for them because, you know, they're filling, you know, 5-7 grand worth of spirit into them.
Yeah.
And they don't know, you know, it could ruin it. Yeah. And that could be throwing, you know, 5-7 grand down the drain. So, you know, it's a huge risk. So, but the more these things work out and the more their success, the more we can do it. And it allows us to produce more exciting beers. The barrel aging, the wild fermenting and the sour beers and barrel fermenting, it's fantastic. It's a different way of brewing because, you know, I love IPA. It's one of my favorite beers, but there's only so much IPAs you can have and hops. And, you know, it's nice to take a corner and use yeast and wild yeast and bacteria flavors to create your beer as well. You know, it just gives you more variety of flavors and different beers.
And Greg, can I just ask, once you have okay, I'm going to call it the base beer brewed, right? Have you got something in your head that says you want to put it into a specific type of barrel or cask, or is it just trial and error?
I will design the beer for the barrel. So, you know, like we'll always see what barrel we can get, and I can go, okay, they're going to give me a sherry barrel, or the peated red was in a Marsala cask. So we'll always know what cask we're going to get, and then, you know, I'll know what flavors that can happen that you can get from them barrels. We'll also look at the whiskey that they want to refill it with as well. I'm always thinking of the whiskey as well as that. So I'll design them the beer for all them reasons. The beer is actually last designed. First of all, we know what barrel we're going to get. I ask what type of spirit they're going to be putting in it. If I don't know that whiskey, which I know most whiskeys by now, but if I don't know it, I'll make sure I drink it and we'll do tastings and then I'll start designing a beer then in my head. So it's
And if you had a wish list, of barrels you could get your hands on, what barrels and what pairings would be on the wish list? Money is no object because I know Finn is fairly well loaded.
if you can get an older barrel, you know, we had one barrel there that's coming out, and previously it had an 18-year-old whiskey that came out of it, and it was I always smell the barrels before I fill them, and it was absolutely fantastic because the longer the whiskey is in the barrel, the more it's absorbed into the barrel, and so then I, you know, with the beer, then I can get more flavors out of that barrel. So generally, if I can get the oldest barrel I can, I can get the best flavors out of it. So if anyone wants to give me an 18-year-old fresh barrel that's only being filled once, that they're the prime barrels. Again, you don't want the barrel that's being reused because barrels do lose their flavor. You know, distillers will throw barrels away all the time. They use them, you know, two, maybe three times, and then after that, they scrap them because there's nothing left in them. All the flavors have been infused out of them. So, you want something that's been filled once, and then if you can get your hands on, and then the longer that first fill is in there, the better. You get more flavor.
Okay, Hugh, you had your hand up for a question. Just want to ask. Come on, Hugh.
Yeah, like, sorry, I'm going back to the old peated again, but it's on the kind of barrel topic. I've just actually cracked open the peated red here. It's lovely, thanks. The peated red had the Marsala barrel, you said. I'm just wondering, apart from, like, you know, it adds to the complexity of the peated red, but have you kind of dabbled with peated barrels? Does
I've never had a peated barrel. Michael was asking me there. I do, since you said that now, I do have a cask that I would ask for. And it would be a first fill 18-year-old Connemara. That would be a good cask. And I'd probably have to go with a stout for that one. So I haven't, and I would love to get a barrel that's been filled with the peated whiskey. It'd be very interesting to do that beer. So,
anyone else, any other questions while we're here?
Guys, about sours, they're an amazing summer beer. Like, so would you ever think of doing something especially for the summer? Like an apple sour, really, like a Granny Smith flavor or something.
Really, yeah.
Get you back in the teeth.
We were actually planning this year, but we just let it go with the way the year was going. But earlier in the year, we were looking at doing a barrel aged raspberry saison. So that was one that we were talking about. We were actually planning earlier this year a couple of fruity beers for the summer, but it just didn't happen this year. We just didn't know what was going on, and we just kind of had to play it safe and just stick with our core beers. Definitely going forward, we will be brewing during the winter, barrel aging during the winter, and then have it ready for the summer. Then to have some nice fruity sour beers would be fantastic.
Anyone else have any burning questions? Beer related, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, I have one question. What's your favourite brewery outside of Dick Max?
In all breweries, there's always a good beer. But for me, at the moment, the top brewery that every beer I have from this brewery is absolutely top notch would be the Kinnegar. I've known him for years. Like I remember going to the RDS when I just started brewing, and he was the beers were really nice, different. He was trying to push the hand pumps, the cask ale, which the Irish people were just not taking to grasp the hand pumps. So he really tries hard, and then he went small, and he was suffering a lot with Kinnegar, but then. He just went big with his brewery there. He got investment, and he's at a big scale now. He's at a huge scale and making absolute cracking beers. So Kinnegar for me would probably be the top brewery now in Ireland. I also like Whiplash. Whiplash is fantastic as well. So, there's so many, some breweries do better beers than in different styles, So it's great to see the quality of Irish beer has come up, dramatically there in the last kind of 4 years. Before the quality, it wasn't really there. But I have to say, in the last 5 to 4 years, the quality of Irish beer has really come up, which is great because the better the quality out there, the better you're gonna have beer produced for you. Because the weaker beers will just fall and lose sales. Breweries and brewers will just have to try harder and make better beer and keep tighter, keep it fresh, package it right, make good quality, interesting beers. And the more quality beers you have, is the higher standard across the board you'll have. So I'd like to keep that. Hopefully we can all keep that going. And then we'll always have a good standard of beer.
So normally, Graham, I'd ask what beer are you drinking right now, but you obviously answered that at the very beginning in terms of the Wolf, right? But just because in general, right, lockdown and the series of lockdowns that we've had and COVID-19 and all this, I suppose we've all been experimenting with beer a bit more than we would normally have. What is your beer of the pandemic thus far? Or do you have one?
I would say a lot of IPA. Because you know hops are so good for you, and they're antiviral. So the strongest hops, strongest IPA you get your hands on, is really good. I actually Wicklow Wolf, I've been really enjoying all their stuff as well. The Mammoth IPA is fantastic, and I've been drinking Scraggy Bay, Kinnegar. What else have we been having? Blacks, Kinsale. I love all his IPAs, the high vis and stuff like that. So there's a lot of them out there.
To all of them now at this stage. What's the beer? What's your beer of 2020?
My beer of 2020. Well, I have to say the honey and hemp. Actually, I've been drinking. I was drinking a lot of that before I went on the dry. I was really enjoying that beer because it was so different.
You have a question there again?
Yeah, this is my last question, I promise.
No worries.
So, like you said, that you've done a seaweed beer there. I wasn't lucky enough to taste it, but I'm just wondering, you live in a very nice part of the country with all sorts of like foraging kind of options for yourselves. Have you been tempted to kind of go down that front, kind of looking into kind of what you can get locally? I know, like myself, yeah. I'm more of a real ale background, and I'm a big fan of kind of the summer elderflower kind of tones and things. Is there anything you kind of tempted to do in the future with that kind of front?
Actually, one of my favorite homebrews that I make every year, I do it seasonal, is elderflower ale. I've done that recipe for the last 11 years now. But that's the home brew. I can play with foraging. Also, I use samphires a lot as well. These things, they can be hard to use in the commercial stage because HSE wants to see tracing of all of these things to make them, you know, food safe. So you can't just, like when I was making, we were coming up with the seaweed beer, and Finn, one of the other owners, and the owner of Dick Max, he runs the bar there. Finn was like, oh, great, come on, we get the shovels and buckets and we'll go down and get the seaweed, you know. I was like, oh, like, I'd love to do that as well, but we can't because the HSC then will, she'll go, okay, where did seaweed come from? And was it cleaned? And was there any crabs in it? And any toxins in the water, you know. So there's a lot of red tape with just throwing in stuff that you find around the place when you're selling it to people. It's just a bit restricted that way. Home brewing wise, I always play around with foraging, and I love using all sorts of botanicals that we have around us. The seaweed that I did get though for that beer was from Grainne McNamara Seaweed Company from Ballyhyde Beach, which is just in North Kerry there. So they're down. They actually come to the Dingle Market every Friday, and they sell their seaweed. It's hand harvested seaweed as well. Which again, getting to know Grainne McNamara, Grainne and her dad, I never knew this whole seaweed business. That it's huge. The seaweed business is massive, and it's only hand picking seaweed is sustainable. But there's big Norwegian companies apparently coming into Ireland, and they're using machines and they're just cleaning the whole place up, which they've done in other countries, and it doesn't grow back. So supporting these little companies then becomes important, and it is important to kind of use as much local companies as you can. So I'm always looking for local collaborations. And it always turns out the best beer as well, because it has a good story. Another beer we had was the coffee stout. which was a winner, and that was with the Bean and Dingle. Again, just three doors down from us, and they're roasting their own coffee beans as well. They had their own roastery there, so that was a nice little collaboration. So, yeah, I love foraging, but when you're brewing beer, you know, legally and to sell it, you can have a lot of restrictions, and your hands can be tied in some places, you know. So it's.
I promised the guys I'd keep this to about an hour. And we're Graham was late, right? So I started the clock when he came in late. So we're around there now. If they're genuine, are any of your questions, you know, call it out now. We'll give it a minute or two. If not, I think we'll wind it up, because, you know, I just want to thank the guys really for giving the time. So are there any of your burning questions? Beer related again. Not nothing else. Okay, I don't see any hands up, and I don't hear anyone talking, right?
Adam there.
I'm going to take it as no questions. On that note, right, I'm going to say to...
Sorry, Mike. It's just me, Adam.
Go on, Adam.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to ask Graham there. So he was talking about foraging and stuff there, that, like, and we had one of the previous meat brewers, we had Mike Bank from Killarney. And he said... obviously, he coming from the States, one of the funniest things he found was he could forage so much stuff that he couldn't get in the States. And I'd like to ask Graham, just if there was any beer you could brew, no matter what, no restrictions, what would you like to brew? What's your dream brew?
My dream brew. I'd probably go with the, I love the elderflower. Also juniper berry, which is fantastic. I love using samphire as well. And you know, I go with the wild ferment as well. You know, just get a big cool ship and put it on a trailer and park it in the middle of a local woods that has lots of berries. And just let the berry yeast ferment it.
Yeah.
that would be always a dream beer of mine. Just I'd love to just, you know, fill up like a stainless steel open vat and just park it in the middle of a forest that has loads of berries and just let the yeasts kind of ferment it out and see what happens.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Graham.
No worries, Adam. No worries. And I'd like to, Michael, I'd like to thank you for your support as well. And I think it's a great idea with the growler. It really gives us small breweries an opportunity to sell beers in different ways as well. For us, you know, it's hard for us to package. Like me and Ozzy were looking at packaging beer, you know, over nearly 2 years ago. And, you know, for such a small brewery, it didn't cost up properly. You know, we weren't actually making anything. It was just paying for the procedure of doing it and the ingredients. There was absolutely no kind of profit from it. The can and the label was costing more than the beer. Yeah. So it's very hard for us small breweries to package beer, and it's not really worthwhile. So what you're doing now is a great way for us to be able to... and yourself to sell in a different way, and to for people to be able to bring a bottle home or grab some bottles of fresh beer. It's coming from a keg as well. It's not sitting on a shelf. It's not going through a distributor and sits in their shed for 2 or 3 months and then goes on the shelf. It's straight in a keg, as fresh as could be, and then sold into a bottle to take home. So it's a great service to provide, and it really helps us little breweries out. So thanks for that, and fair play to you.
Oh, no bother, Graham. And I think you missed the start when we opened up. Like, I mean, this weekend, this it's 112 litres of your beer has been sold, right? So it's 112 growlers of Dick Max beer has left us between Thursday and today. So that's across 3 days, right? So it's a lot of beer, right? And I you know, any brewery of any size would be quite happy with that, right? Because that's a lot of beer that's been moved. And
that's great.
And it's funny, right? Because, you know, Owen is asking how many liters have we left. We have a few left, Owen, don't worry about that, right? But, you know, genuinely, right, growlers and your type of brewery are a very traditional way of brewing in not only Ireland, but across the world, right? So if you think of exactly the story that Ozzy told earlier on, the brewery formed, it basically facilitated the locality. It didn't really move outside of that as such because there was no need. There was such good local support. I mean, if you go back 50 or 100 years, maybe 120 years, you know, in Ireland, yeah, much like many of the European countries, there was multiple local breweries across the country, right? In localities, there was breweries and they were facilitating their own beer, right? And how did people get that beer home? They put it into growlers and they took it home, right? So I think if nothing else, right, the pandemic, right, and 2020 has brought us back to a little bit more of tradition that existed, you know, and it's really, yeah, funny because we were just talking about this the other day, myself and James. One of the first iterations of beer in this house when it opened, well before us, was to bottle beer and resell it, was to rebottle, mm-hmm, whiskey and sell it. You know, and who would have thought, if you had said to us 2 years ago that we would be full-time bottling growlers and selling it, and people would have said, you're mad. And then the thoughts that 28 lunatics would have come on a call this evening and... who are mad into growlers and craft beer and bottled beer, you know, and it really has, it says a huge amount about the craft movement, not only in Limerick, but just in Ireland, you know, and the quality of the beer that has been produced. And, you know, if we've learned nothing from the downside of this, I think what we've learned is that there is good quality beer out there that's available to take at home. It doesn't have to necessarily come out of a can. It doesn't necessarily have to come out of a mass-produced bottle. You know, you can get it local and it can be just as good.
Yeah.
Now I'm off my soapbox now, and I'm going to say, Ozzy, do you want to say anything just before we go?
No, just to touch on what you're just saying there. I suppose this year has been so different, as I say, for anyone. But one thing that we found when the pubs did finally open back up on the 29th of June, I think. And, you know, people had a lot of time to think about it and everything. We had no idea how the market would be for us, because Dingle being a town that is so, you know, so many Americans and international tourists come there. And obviously this year we were just depending on Irish tourists. We didn't know how it would go. We had no idea. We were blown away by the fact that we sold so much beer. We obviously sold less than the year before. Dick Mac's pub itself wasn't open during that time because of the food restriction. But we still sold 50% of the beer that we sold the year before, even without Dick Mac's pub open. And Dick Mac's sells at least a third of our beer all the time. So we also noticed a lot more local interest. People that maybe didn't even know much about the brewery suddenly took a lot more interest. We had local people coming on the tour. Laura was doing the tour for us the whole summer. And every tour that was on, there was a couple of local people on it. Whereas any other year, there was, you know, the majority of the people on the tours weren't even Irish. Whereas those couple of months when we got the tour back going and people were drinking our beer, it was the locals that started coming to it. And I heard it from so many people. It was like suddenly appreciating the fact of small businesses and that. And it just gave us a little bit more hope that no matter how this year turns out, that we really do feel that people are putting a lot more thought into what they're buying. I know I am across the board, but I think it's really worked out in that way. And I think people really appreciate how much work goes into and how much, you know, it's not all about just massive quantities and small margin. It's about quality and, smaller business trying to make it. So in that way, we really appreciate what's going on, like with you guys letting us come to Limerick and that sort of thing. And I think it was last April we were supposed to be going on doing a tap takeover with you guys, yeah, which would have been our first tap takeover ever. I can't wait till the day that it really happens and everything opens back up and we can come to Limerick and, you know, kind of share it all with you guys. And we're really waiting for that. And thank you very much for having us over.
Yep. Thanks for your support, everyone. You know, we none of us would be here without it. So, keep up the support and keep living the dream.
Yeah, and on that note, keep drinking beer. We are open again next Thursday. Thursday to Saturday for collection. We do, to Owen Nocton's question, we do have some, we have about 59 litres of beer left. So there is some Dick Max beer left to be sold. So Owen, you can buy that. And on that note, Ray, I just want to say thank you to everyone for taking the time to join in. Thank you to everyone who buys the beer, because you can see from the two guys, it means a lot to them. It means a huge amount to us, right? It always does. You know, and if there's no further questions, queries, or comments, I think I'm going to end it, because we're over a little bit on time, and I know the guys appreciate you taking time to listen to them. So thank you very much, guys, and have a good night.
Thank you. Thanks, lads. Thank you very much. Good night.
We've come to the end of Meet the Brewer. I'd like to thank Graham, Ozzy, and Laura from Dick Max and Dingle for joining us and sharing their experiences. I'd like to thank all those that joined us, all those that participated and asked questions. In particular, I want to thank all those who have purchased beer. Our customers, without you, we wouldn't exist. Without you, as the guys have rightly said, there wouldn't be a need to make beer. So a big thank you to everyone. And finally, a thank you to you for allowing us into your life for what is about an hour, for allowing us to discuss brewing, Dick Max, and all things Mother Max. Thank you.